Wicked Chronic in Natick, Massachusetts is a brand new and unique store, boutique-styled retail shop that focuses on selling counterculture products where Wiccan and cannabis cultures come together for a rather unique atmosphere. They're located on 185 Worcester Street, right next to Subway and Hertz Rental Car. Their hours of operation are Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., and they can be contacted at 508-545-8105. They are closed on Sundays, and you can also reach them on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Google+. Welcome to the Dead TV Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
The Dead TV Podcast is a podcast dedicated to canceled television shows in the horror, science fiction, and fantasy genre. And we do mean canceled, as this episode is the final episode of Constantine, the NBC TV series, which ran from 2014 till the last air date, February 13th, 2015. Which, was that a Friday the 13th?
Oh, actually it was. It was Friday the 13th in 2015.
Ah, what a fitting day to end Constantine's run on television.
So, and especially since we're going to be going into doing the Friday the 13th, the series show coming up soon.
Correct, yes. We will be starting that in October after we do our first animated show, first of many animated shows I hope to do on the Dead TV Podcast, Swamp Thing the series. But before we get to Swamp Thing, we will have a special episode of Constantine covering his appearance on Arrow coming up in 2 weeks. But before we get there, Mr. Seneca has the episode synopsis for us, as well as the title.
The last one for Constantine is called Waiting for the Man, which was originally aired on February 13th, 2015. Detective Jim Corrigan asks John and Zed for help with a case involving a missing girl. Papa Midnight plots his revenge. The truth behind the rising darkness is revealed. Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, the rising darkness isn't quite as revealed as I was kind of expecting it to be. You know, I was kind of hoping, like, maybe the angel Zuriel or, like, Satan would show up or whatever, and it'd be this, like, giant cliffhanger, which, unfortunately, I got a question. Are these episodes in actual order of what they intended for continuity?
You know, this episode does not feel like a season finale at all. Like, this feels like this was an episode 13 out of a 16 episode set. You know, this does not feel anywhere close to the resolution of anything that went on during the entirety of season one. This is almost like a one-shot with a little bit of kickback note towards Manny's extended role as an angel slash, I don't know, bad guy in the scene. I don't know. The entire episode checks out, you know, the final closing parting view of Manny, and he is letting Papa Midnight go and saying that he runs the show with the Brujeria, and that's it. And it's such a letdown. I was very severely, catastrophically disappointed by this episode.
Also, all the principal players of the show are here, including, you know, Dead Gary, who shows up. We'll talk about that. But there's one person in particular who's not in the final episode of Constantine.
Chaz!
What the hell, NBC? Where was Chaz?
Yeah, Chaz is completely gone. And, there was a script for an episode 14 released, which I have read, and, you know, I'll be talking about later, but he's also not in that one either, so I have no idea what was going on with Chaz's involvement in all of this.
True. It's just, you know, just they didn't have anything to write him in, but again, like, everyone else is in this episode, including, like, side characters like Jim Corrigan, a.k.a. the Spectre, who we get a little glimpse of, and Papa Midnight, the villain of the show.
Yeah, even a callback to one of his former associates, Gary Lester, who, you know, animates a corpse just to talk to him. So you're getting a lot of people coming in and out of this episode, but yeah, no Chaz. Not even an appearance. No. It's disappointing. Not overall, disappointing episode.
Not even a mention either, by the way.
No. Yeah, he's not, you know, doing family duty or any of those little, you know, one-liners to explain away his absence.
So, at the beginning of the episode, we have... Ooh, do I have the right... Yes, we do. We have Jim Corrigan, basically, during the... Just before the Blood Moon begins.
Just before the Blood Moon, he goes to John with a very unusual case. You know, it's basically a suddenly mummified body, and, you know, it's kind of out of the realm of regular police work.
There's, like, a weird cult in this episode. I called it the entire time the cult of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Why did you call it that?
Just because of the setting and everything of, like, this weird cult, just, like, where they're living and stuff. The house reminds me of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre house.
I guess a little, you know. Yeah, it has that kind of funky smell with the fly catchers hanging down from the ceiling and, you know, trash everywhere. It's extremely, extremely filthy.
It's
certainly similar but different from the comic book, but this whole, like, beginning plot line, what we'll call plot A, that's actually taken very much so from the Hellblazer comics, the original Sins plot line. This set of issues where the storyline with the girls takes place is actually also the first appearance of Zed. So that's a bit different in how the show brought her in, and you know, things are different in this. And then we've got the subplot line B, which is Papa Midnight and the bounty on Constantine and all of that good stuff, which is not anywhere to be seen in the comics.
This also, the way they were all dressed also reminded me of the Unstoppable Kimmy Schmidt, because that's on Netflix right now. And they all wore the same type of dresses in that when they were living in the bunker.
Yeah, the kind of, I wouldn't say Amish or whatnot, but very plain-looking, simple outfits. And yeah, and these girls were outfitted with wedding dresses.
Correct. Do you think this creepy cult, redneck wannabe stalker crazy guy is actually also sleeping with all these women?
I mean, he'd have to be sleeping with corpses, but the corpses look pretty undisturbed.
Yeah, but they're not... We don't really discover that they're corpses until, like, later on in the episode. In the beginning, they all look pretty lively.
Like, right in the beginning, like, the first scene, and the girl Vesta, you know, long red hair, beautiful, innocent-looking girl, she's kind of hanging out in this abandoned fun park, amusement park, carnival-ish type of place, and these three girls approach her, all in these kind of weird wedding dresses. And right there, the first meeting, they bring down the necks of their dresses, and she sees these rings around their neck, which is basically like lynching marks. Any ordinary girl would have saw that and just ran the other way. But Vesta is a bit stupid, or somehow enchanted by these girls. But nothing that I saw in the episode proved that these girls, ghosts, whatever they are, have any sort of actual enchantment. They just have a very comforting presence. Yeah, the ghosts just take her away. But if I saw three girls my age with wounds around their necks, I would have been really freaked out. You know, that's like clue one that something is not right in the situation.
At the very beginning, right after the cold opening and the title song, we get Zed meeting up with Corrigan, and she sees the specter spirit around him with his, like, kind of flesh decaying a bit.
And the little green smoke around him, green fire.
Yeah.
And that kind of continues throughout the entire episode, that green fire, and just kind of watching him. I guess that might be his specter form.
I don't think he's the specter yet. I just think that she's seeing a vision of, like, he's going to die, and that his future will be linked to some type of, like, green aura around him.
Yeah. I was hoping they'd get a bit more into it, but
I'm just curious if they would possibly, like, we're setting up the love interest for Zed to be Jim, him to die, him to come back as the Spectre, you know, something that she, you know, obviously has been keeping from John, that she's seeing this, like, weird green fiery aura around him.
Mm-hmm.
Would this actor have played the Spectre and Jim Corrigan, or would he just been playing Jim Corrigan and another actor play the ghostly image of the Spectre? Would it have been in the CGI Spectre? Who knows? Because the Spectre is this ghostly white guy with green hood, green swim trunks, green boots, and green gloves, and he's pretty much naked.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It would have been really interesting to see how that played out, because all of that type of development of the character of Jim Corrigan could have been great in a season two. But unfortunately, we did not get one.
They also, I like the fact that they put up a Spectre created by Jerry Siegel. You know who Jerry Siegel is, of course.
Yes, yes.
Co-creator of the Man of Steel, Superman. There, of course, then they go over to the graveyard where they start digging up corpses.
And so the recently deceased person, they pull him out and they see, yes, he's truly mummified. And John splashes some holy water to expose this symbol. And this symbol, which you see throughout the show, throughout the episode, is actually the sigil for Lucifer. Very common. There wasn't a lot of symbology in this episode that was very complex. It was all Satanist-based, satanic-based. Very easy to pick out in a lineup. But the sigil for Lucifer was kind of branded on the corpse's chest. So when he rubbed the, you know, splashed the holy water on him, it glowed. And then suddenly his friend Gary Lester inhabited the corpse just to tell Constantine that there was a bounty on his head. And that he was in grave danger. He just wanted to warn him that there was a bounty for him. Which kind of makes sense that a lot of underworld creatures would want Constantine dead. You know, that's kind of the nature of his work.
I did like the fact that they had this whole, like, reanimated corpse thing where a dead body or spirit tries to contact John. Something that, in the last 11 episodes, they didn't really ever do, and that's something that happens on Hellblazer, in the Hellblazer comics, all the time.
I mean, oh, yeah.
John Constantine and Mike Mignola's Hellboy have very much a ton in common when it comes to reanimated corpses giving them information, just like a stoolie would give a cop information on the streets about gangs.
Yeah, it's like the word on the street is, you know, oh, be careful of this because this guy's after you. And yeah, that happens a lot. And they've just now brought it into the show, and it's the final episode.
But again, you know, first season stuff getting out of the way, character development. We could have gotten a second season, and at the end, Mr. Zeneca will have a little bit of a treat for us about something from the second season when we get to the end of the episode.
Now, when you're talking the differences between the actual plot line in the comics and what's going on in the show for this plot A, you know, the girl's plot line. The girl in the show, her name is Vesta, red hair, beautiful girl. The girl in the comics is actually Gemma. And Gemma, Gemma Masters, is Constantine's niece. So this is extremely personal for him.
Yeah, but they don't make that connection on the TV series, in the TV episode at all. By the way, the actress who plays Vespa, Annalise Basso, she's also had other weird names. She was Lina Zander in Ouija, Origin of Evil, which, if you haven't seen, is much better than its the movie that it's the prequel to, Ouija Board. Not a very good movie. Watch Ouija, Origin of Evil. She was Vespa, again, in Captain Fantastic, a movie that was all over the Academy Awards last year.
Nice.
And she played young Kayla in Oculus, the younger version of the character played by Karen Gillian from Doctor Who and Guardians of the Galaxy. She played the child version of her in the flashback sequences.
Oh, cool!
Yeah.
I didn't even pick that one out.
Oculus is okay if you ever want to watch a movie that could have been like an episode of Doctor Who without, you know, the doctor showing up to save Amy Powell's character. and she's going to be tied into another comic book coming up soon. I didn't know about this, but Snowpiercer is being made into a TV series.
Really? I mean, it was a graphic novel, and then I actually really, really enjoyed the movie.
A lot of people enjoyed the movie. Unfortunately, the movie got a shit release starring Chris Evans, a.k.a. Captain fucking America, as the lead character.
Yeah, I loved the movie. So when is this new show going to come out?
It says 2018 right now, but it says... Last survivors of the planet as they inhabit the Snowpiercer, a train that travels around the globe, which is divided into two feuding classes. The show will also star Jennifer Connelly, who played Betty Banner in the Hulk movie.
Nice.
Yeah. Those are the only two people I can pull out of the cast so far. A lot of the names I don't really recognize because I've never read the graphic novel. I have only ever seen the movie. But yeah, this is definitely a TV series based on the graphic novel. So, and so soon after the movie came out, too.
Cool, cool. I look forward to that.
Yeah. Anyway, moving back on to Constantine.
Yeah. Okay. This whole kind of plot A, you know, with the girls, one of the things that it hinges on, and the whole reason that this Satanist guy is doing this, is because of a lunar tetrad. It's basically four lunar eclipses, like three or four lunar eclipses in a row. And that's kind of the timing of why each of these girls were taken and killed and whatnot. Funny thing is that back when the show was being made, there was actually a lunar tetrad in the years 2014 to 2015. So we have... Huh?
Go ahead, sorry.
Okay. So we have the first one, which is April 15th, 2014. Second one, which is October 8th, 2014. Third one, which was April 4th, 2015. And the last was September 28th, 2015. So while they have the actual dates that they say in the show different, but because this event was going on while the creators were making the show, they use that astronomy to actually kind of explain some of these rising darkness and reasons why, you know, this or that happens. And so I thought that was actually just a nice little nod towards what's actually going on in the cosmos at the time.
Sorry, Manny shows up, and I love how John points out to him, "You never come when I call," and he's like, Zed says, "I called him," and he says that, "I come when it called nicely."
yeah. And in this episode, Zed didn't even really call him, but, you know, he says that Zed works on a different level than regular humans, and, you know, John doesn't ask him nicely, so of course he's not going to do anything.
True. The other thing that I was going to say is connected to the fact that this episode... Even though I don't think it really felt like a season finale, it did follow the previous episode where Manny and Zed meet.
Yes.
After Zed's diagnosis of a brain tumor.
Yeah. It felt like to me, like if I were to really put a further plot line on Manny and Zed and, you know, what's actually going on here, if we were using the comic book Zed's main, you know, arc, then Manny could have been the angel that was scheduled to impregnate Zed to bring about this next... It's kind of like the next Christ child.
Mm-hmm.
And if Manny was actually the one that was supposed to do it and bring about this next Christ, then him cozying up to Zed to make her more apt to actually be with him makes logical sense if they were building up to that. And it also... The role of the Brujeria and the Rising Darkness, I'm not exactly sure how that plays in, unless the Brujeria are actually involved with, like, the Damnation Army, Resurrection Crusade, you know, the group of people that she's running away from actively. So if they're all kind of involved, and Manny's at the head, trying to bring himself into this... chain of events to bring about a Christ child, and Zed is the person that is going to do that, it does make sense that he is now friendly with her and comes to her personally on his own. I was just thinking about that the other day.
The spell that they need involves hair from that hairbrush, and I wrote in my notes, tells Mr. Zeneca the number one thing that you hate, finding body hair and gross hair everywhere in places that people don't pick up their hair. He just, like, rips it out of that brush, and I was just like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, he pulls out that hair from the hairbrush and then licks the toothbrush, which I found very gross, licks the toothbrush and then stuffs the hair in his mouth and takes the lamp and pops the bulb and then just sticks his fingers right in there trying to cause himself a somewhat of a heart attack. Not that you could actually do that and it would actually work. Like, cool. All that utter crap. You would not be able to do that.
He's trying to pierce the veil, I think he says.
Yes.
Electrocuting himself. And, of course, he's bleeding from his eyes like a vampire from True Blood has bloody tears.
Yeah, and that would be a sign of burst capillaries in the eyes.
Correct.
Had that actually been done. But if you took a look, like, his eye sockets, his eyeballs weren't red and inflamed at all. It was just a little bit of blood dripping from the inside corners of his eyes, as if, you know, he went through something. Utter crap.
We go over to Papa Midnight, where we learn he put the bounty on John, and then a bunch of zombies show up to try and kill Papa Midnight.
No.
Voodoo zombies.
No.
I thought there were voodoo zombies.
No, Papa Midnight creates a zombie to go after Constantine, because Papa Midnight is trying to claim the bounty, so he didn't make the bounty.
Oh, yeah,
he's trying
right.
to claim the bounty, so that his sister would actually be free from damnation and hell.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Papa Midnight is trying to kill Constantine, so then he can use whatever the bounty is to be able to barter his way to setting his sister's soul free. He already knows that his own soul is damned, but he wants his sister's soul to be free. It's kind of trading places upon death type of thing,
by the way,
from what I gathered.
All this talk of the Blood Moon and stuff like that, the day that we're recording this, which is August 20th, 2017, we are on the cusp of a total solar eclipse happening here in the United States of America as of tomorrow, correct?
Tomorrow, yes, tomorrow.
Yes. So, do you have your special glasses for it, Mr. Zeneca?
I don't need glasses. Everyone is, like, going crazy for glasses so you can actually look up at the sun and watch it.
Yeah.
I just make myself a little pinhole camera. I don't need to stare at the sun for it. I just make a little pinhole camera, and I can see the eclipse take place without burning my retinas.
No, well, here's my question, though. Can you, like, catch a quick glimpse at it? Like, just kind of look at the sky really quickly?
No, you
can't?
No, you'll burn your retinas, man.
Oh, even for a microsecond?
I mean, you could look at the sun for a microsecond, you know, in passing.
Yeah.
And you'll still get, like, some sort of damage to your retina. It won't be permanent because you're not really burning it. It's just, it will hurt, and it's not good for your eyes at all.
Well, what if you're driving and the sun is in the skyline in front of you? How do you avoid that?
Usually you squint and put down your visors.
Oh, okay. So, but you according to Mr. Zeneca, you don't need to go buying Amazon eclipse glasses, which I think is happening around 2:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah, and it's going to be amazing if you're in the stream of total total solar eclipse. It's going to be amazing, but where I am in Philadelphia, it will be a partial eclipse, and I'm not going to be driving all the way to Georgia or whatnot to see it in totality. But yeah, we're going to, you know, sit outside for a little bit, look at our pinhole cameras every, like, 20 minutes or so until it gets closer to the apex, and then stay there for the couple of minutes that is actually at the apex of a partial solar eclipse over here, and then go on with our day, really.
It could be a supernatural phenomenon, they said.
Well, everything is pretty much a supernatural phenomenon if you don't know how the world works.
That's just what I read on some websites, like, you know, onionnews.com or something.
Well, there you go. You get your news from The Onion. Christopher Columbus actually knew that a solar eclipse was coming about And he bartered, you know, threatened, you know, saying that my God will shun you with darkness, you know, if you do not feed us and provide us with supplies. And because he knew that a solar eclipse was coming, he, you know, conned all of the native peoples into believing he had some powers and his God is powerful. And, yeah, so if you don't know what's going on, it will totally be supernatural and amazing and wow. But if you know it's coming and, you know, this is science, it's predictable.
The we get some creepy. We get the beginning of the creepy wedding.
Yeah, the wedding, and one of the things that
or as I like to
also
call it,
differs,
or as I like to call it, oh, the wedding of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Why hasn't that been made into a movie yet? The wedding of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Everyone would die.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I think
the chainsaw would go on, and you know, scream, and.
Maybe.
It would probably be a very short movie.
Maybe. We'll have to see.
Yeah, you have to stretch it out for 2 hours with tension and drama. Yeah, the wedding scene, Bess doesn't really want to actually marry. You know, she's kind of for it in different periods throughout the events. You know, she's getting ready in a wedding dress and getting flowers and talking to the, you know, the other girls, the ghosts, and she comments about, well, we're going to have to do something about the smell in here. And then immediately the ghosts are just offended, you know, offended that
yeah.
She mentioned the bad smell in the house. Turns out it's their rotting corpses, but it's just really funny. And that's one of the details from the comic book that they kept. You know, in the comic book, Gemma is kind of goes along with these girls, like they're not dressed in wedding dresses, they're dressed in ordinary kid clothes. She goes along with them and even suggests, you know, do you think the man will marry me? And when she actually gets dressed in the wedding dress, she talks about the scent and the smell, and the other girls just kind of shrug it off, like, oh, you'll get used to it, you know, you don't really notice it after you're married. And Gemma goes through the entire thing. She actually says yes to the vows. She goes all the way up to almost the point of being strangled before she gets saved by John and Zed. And in this one, you know, like the girl has some power of her own. She says, I don't want to do this, and runs away while tipping over some candles and starting a small fire. And for some reason, this man just isn't perturbed by this at all. He's like, oh, I'll catch you. There's nowhere to run to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like any sort of villain.
After the Eclipso episode, this is kind of an inept villain.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's kind of a Cajun hillbilly. You know, looks like almost a mechanic with a trucker hat. Not really someone that, you know, a young girl would fall for in any way. I was surprised that he had all of his teeth, really.
Definitely. we get the, the just before the commercial break, this is definitely a commercial break scene. Papa Midnight shooting John Constantine. Dead. Oh, my God. But
yes.
When we come back and we find out, no, it was a reanimated corpse that John used to fool Papa Midnight.
Yeah. So in plot B-line, there's a cop that kind of, you know, gets in the way and our killer guy takes out and hangs up in the satanic way. You know, it's everything in this is supposed to just be drilled into you, like, this guy is satanic. And John uses that corpse because Papa Midnight sent a zombie to him, which Jim Corrigan, you know, put down. The next thing that Papa Midnight does is he sends a crow to find Constantine. Once Constantine kind of recognizes that, hey, there's someone watching me, this crow, you guys go ahead. And then he puts the glamour spell on this corpse, makes the corpse walk and talk just like him to fool Papa Midnight into basically shooting him. And so it's kind of like a, you know, zombie v. zombie, you know, like Papa Midnight sent his zombies, Constantine sends his zombies, and I'm sure that the promos for this episode featured that gunshot to the head of Constantine where splash blood on Papa Midnight's face, and you see that in the promo for that split second, you're like, oh my god, did he kill Constantine? Of course not, he's the main character.
Yeah, I always hate that, like, just fake out, like, shot, cut to commercial kind of thing, and it's like, what are you doing? Oh, stop it. I mean, the best thing I always relate that to, and I've mentioned this on my regular radio show, Dr. Chris's Radio Horror, a lot, is the last Child's Play movie, Curse of Chucky. I almost said the Cult of Chucky. Cult of Chucky is actually coming out this October. Curse of Chucky, they have, like, the, oh my god, who is killing the people, like, moments every 5 minutes, and we know it's the fucking doll. Stop.
Yeah.
Stop. Just stop it, okay? I mean, you're not doing anything that anybody who's actually watching this movie doesn't fucking know it's Chucky. But you're doing all these, like, sight gag, you know, off-camera kills. We don't see the person doing it or the doll doing it at all because you're waiting for this big reveal of Chucky to be animated and talking in Brad Dourif's voice. But just like, stop doing that, okay?
You're going to see a Chucky movie, you're expecting Chucky to kill people. That's basically it.
It's just like all of the Friday the 13th movies. We don't see Jason killing half the people most of the time up to a certain point. You know what I mean? It's like we see the weapon. We don't see Jason. It's like, stop it, okay? We know who's fucking killing these people. In the later entries, they stop doing that. Jason's in shadow, but at least we see him. We see the hockey mask, like, through the shadow light and stuff. It's just, God, just stop it. Whoever executives of any television show ever, and I'm sure we're going to get this in Friday the 13th, the TV series, and the reason why I mentioned Friday the 13th, the movies, but in that, the killer is going to be different in every single episode because of, you know, it's a, you know, like, MacGuffin-themed show, the upcoming Friday the 13th TV series that I'm referring to.
Yeah, because everything is a cursed object, so it's different every episode, yet it has the same type of formulaic way that each episode runs. Yeah, no, I don't think there's a single episode, as I was reviewing the synopses of the seasons, I don't think there's a single episode where two episodes are based on the same villain, because every single person has a different object, and those objects get taken away from them by the end of the episode. I think at this point in time, I'd like to do our douchebag of the moment. Douchebag of the episode.
Yes, who be the douchebag of this episode?
Okay, my vote is Constantine for this episode. You know, not Manny, you know, at the very big reveal at the end. But in this episode, there's just one line that kind of stuck out to me as like, oh, you bastard. So Jim Corrigan and John are going down the hallways of this house, and John has a shotgun and Jim has a handgun, and you know, they meet in the hallway, they do this like, oh, you could have gotten your head blown off, yeah, and then they're turning to go the same direction, and John insists that he goes first because he says, quote, mine's bigger.
I also reminded me of when John has the shotgun. It's just like his boomstick moment.
Yeah. This episode didn't have a lot of good writing, and that sentence just stuck out to me like, oh, dude, really?
Well, it rates right up there with like revealing the rising darkness, and it's like, well, I wanted to see the rising darkness, or give us like a cliffhanger teaser that, you know, maybe you could have picked up in the, obviously with the show being canceled, you could have picked up in the upcoming animated show coming out in January with, like, the whole Rising Darkness plot line. But, you're right. It's a badly written episode compared to a strong series of episodes that we've had since episode one.
Yeah, it was definitely a very weak episode. So that was my douchebag of the moment.
There's also a color palette in this episode. Very, like, everything's very blue and then everything's very red.
Yeah. I wonder what's going on with that, because the last episode didn't actually have that color palette. Not that I can recall.
The, what do you call it? The Jim arrests the killer and John wakes up. Real justice, basically, is what John wants, and they decide to let, you know, Jim, like, kind of uncuffs the guy. That's what John wants for the girls. He wants a real justice, not, you know, human trial justice.
Yeah, and I thought this was maybe even a little bit out of character. You know, John just convincing Jim Corrigan to let him run so he can shoot him. You know, it goes along with Jim Corrigan and what he's going to become as the Spectre.
The righteous,
I don't know.
Yeah, the vengeance hand
weird.
Of God. I think Jim has seen enough things to know what true monsters are like, and realizing that the system, our broken justice system, would not work very well for this absolute monster who's involved in, you know, all sorts of, like, you know, weird supernatural stuff. He needed to do that, and he had to agree with John that this man needed to be put down the vigilante way, not through the justice system.
Yeah, and you know, it works for more Jim Corrigan than actual John with that. But, you know, justice was served, vengeance was served, three girls, their spirits, you know, get released, and, you know, the Vesta goes on back to her family and her mom, and all is right with the world.
Yeah, the... Manny talks about the war that's coming. Of course, the war never comes, as this is being the final episode and all. Manny appears before Papa at midnight and tells him that the Brujeria,
Brujeria.
Yeah, they work for him.
Yeah.
Was that supposed to set up something that Manny is working against God to allow these Brujeria to be his, like, little foot soldiers on Earth or something?
I have no idea. I could not find anything about it. And even in the next episode, which the script was released, I can go into that, but there's nothing. There's no clue as for, like, what exactly they were going for or where this was leading. It's such an anticlimactic season finale.
Just before you get into the synopsis of what the episode 14 that was never released was done, on IMDb, they say that there were over 50,000 signatures put together to try and get the show to pick up, but it never happened. However, the 14th episode script was released online, which you have.
Yes, episode 14 called Final Girl. And this was actually released by the executive producer, Daniel Cerone, on October 30th, 2015. And so this was kind of done in promotion for the Arrow episode that he is in. And basically, this entire episode is a one-shot. You could place this episode anywhere else within season one, and it still would have worked. It's basically a slasher film. So it starts out as... four people, and this very, very drunk friend, and he's not really a friend, more like a bully, but they live in a small town, so they kind of have to put up with them. They accidentally kill him, you know, so it's kind of reminiscent of I Know What You Did Last Summer type of thing,
mm-hmm.
And dump him in a well, find out that he's not actually dead when he hits the water. It kind of wakes him up, and they just take a huge rock and crack it over his skull, you know, just trying to drop it down the well, and whoop, he's dead. So all four of these friends are kind of nervous and, you know, typical I Know What You Did Last Summer stuff. At the same time, John and Zed travel to a campground, and this is in Kentucky, travel to a campground where they've been clued in by Manny. It said that they've been clued in by Manny that something is growing, like there's a growing threat, a developing situation. So they go to this place, and immediately it's apparent that, you know, after this couple of touching moments where Zed and John do trust falls, because this is a corporate retreat type of campsite, they see a person hanging from a zip line, you know, very mutilated. And they wander around, and there's more mutilated bodies here and there, and so something is definitely going on. Turns out that it is a slasher guy. Definitely a slasher guy. And one lone survivor is jammed in an air vent because she was trying to hide from the slasher, and the slasher is actually a fired employee named Brad Howard, although that's not really important for the episode. In steps, you know, during the kind of battle with this guy, in steps, new character, new person in John's life that we have not seen before. Her name is Judith, and she is from Newcastle. So she was one of the people at Newcastle. She was a psychic back then, and she's got kind of this punk rock, bottle blonde, goth lipstick with a katana type of girl. And she makes quick work of this slasher. Decapitates him, game over.
That's an episode I would love to have seen done.
Yeah, it would have been very entertaining. I probably wouldn't have put it towards the end of the season, just because I kind of want to see it build, you know, more of that storyline, but this would have been a really good episode.
It would also have been great if Warner Brothers could have put that script on the DVD set.
That would have been awesome. I had to actually get this from a Dropbox that the executive producer released.
There's a great YouTube channel that just went over a bunch of canceled DC comic properties, including like all of the Batman films that have that were never made, and other DC comic films like the Justice League movie that was supposed to have been directed by the guy who created and directed the Mad Max films.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was supposed to be out in 2007. The whole movie was cast and everything, but the writer's strike unfortunately happened and canceled the project.
Yeah, I this would have been a good episode. Because right after Judith, you know, makes quick work of this slasher guy, John recognizes her, she recognizes him, and they passionately kiss.
Oh.
So this is a first episode where we're seeing John with an actual relationship person. And so, you know, they talk and they go back to Jasper Winter's mill, and they're talking about the past and about Newcastle and about how Zed's a psychic and she's a psychic, and Judith's psychic powers only come out when she sleeps. She goes to bed, and then she sees the crime through the criminal's eyes. Through her dream, she picks out clues and then tracks down exactly where murder is right now. So she dreams in real time, so they're not premonitions. So everything that's happening, so she can see the last light of the victim's eyes as they're being killed. And she does this every night. So she's gotten very good at tracking down these people, killing them, and then moving on to the next one. But turns out that all of these people that she's tracking down are not actually people. They are reanimated corpses. And so the only way for her to stop, you know, these reanimated corpses is to decapitate them. Boom, decapitate, take care of the victims, you know, remaining victims, set it up for the police to arrive and disappear. And she's gotten very, very good at this. She has, like, a system. We cut to the four friends that are racked with guilt over killing the one drunk buddy. You see, as the point of view person, you see the dead buddy reanimating and trying to get out of the well that he's in. Turns out an old man actually mistakes him for being a live person, throws down the bucket, he climbs up, guy gets out, and now this is the next person in the line that Judith dreams about and is going to be seeking out. John and Judith have this wonderful, wonderful sex scene, very touching. It's described in the script as clothes being peeled off and passionate kisses. Like, the only real scene through that the entire season one that would have been actual true passion for an extended period of time. Huh. So they're curled in bed together and everything.
That would have been our yum moment of the episode. What would our yum moment of this episode have been?
Maybe just the way that Zed was looking at Manny.
Oh, I thought maybe like the way Zed and Corrigan were trying to spark something. I didn't really feel the chemistry between those two, but we didn't really get a whole heck of a lot of Zed and Corrigan being alone together for me to fully hook into that.
Yeah, he was definitely being a little flirtatious with her, and she was kind of avoiding his gaze. So, you know, there's definitely something there, you know, some sparks of something. And the way she was looking at Manny was definitely very loving and friendly. So, yeah, we didn't get a lot of yum in this one, but in this episode 14, there would have been a lot of it. Oh, my God. Would have been a lot of it. Zed actually says that she is a very deep sleeper and kind of warns them before she goes to bed. And the very next morning, Zed walks up and I'm like, oh my god, you two are like banshees.
The entire box set of Constantine can be found on Warner's Archive website or on Amazon. All 13 episodes are in the box set. So that is where you can find this canceled television show from NBC, which should have been on the CW. And maybe if it had been, we would have gotten an extra long season of it. We could have had six DC shows going on the CW. I don't know what time period Constantine would stay on. It was on Friday nights on NBC. But the CW currently has a Friday night show starting up this fall. They have Black Lightning, the story of Jefferson Pierce, district attorney, who has lightning electric powers. And he's apparently going to have had some backstory that predates the appearance of the Arrow or the Flash.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. So we will have Supergirl, Flash, Arrow, DC's Legends of Tomorrow, which is a show a lot of people keep asking, why isn't John showing up on that show? Because that has a rotating cast members of DC comic characters, and Black Lightning. And then, of course, we've had the Vixen animated show, as well as the upcoming Constantine animated series. So we will see, which is being done in the same style of animation of the Justice League Dark movie, which we will have a review of next week.
Next time. The Dead TV Podcast.
Next
yes.
time on the Dead TV Podcast. We need to have somebody actually say that, too.
yeah, that'd be cool.
You can find all these episodes and the rest of our episodes that we're covering, that covered Kindred the Embrace, the last show that we did, on RadioHorror.com. You can also find us on our individual Twitters, which is at ChrisDSAV.
Yeah, and I'm at Elegantly Kinky.
And we can also be found on the Dead TV Podcast Facebook page. And we opened up with our normal theme song by Jess O'Lantern, but we were actually going to end it with a song picked up by Mr. Zeneca called Venus of the Hard Cell by Mucus Membrane. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, Mucus Membrane. Mucus Membrane is John Constantine's old punk band, and the lyrics for this song are actually in the comic book themselves. So this was produced and very wonderful actual song by Spider Legs in 2012. You can find it on YouTube. But yeah, give a listen.
Yeah, and you can find them on at Spider Legs Music on Twitter. If you do like it, you can send them a comment. But we leave you now with that music as we end Constantine for the Dead TV Podcast, only returning next week for a very special episode. And then in about 3 weeks, join us as Michael Ravenshadow of Trick or Treat Radio joins us for Swamp Thing, the animated series. So that's what's coming up on the Dead TV Podcast. Also, almost before I forget, don't forget if you would like to become a if you'd like to help the Dead TV Podcast, you can by either becoming a sponsor or also becoming joining us on Patreon. Look up Radio Horror /Patreon, and there you can become a sustainer of even just $1 a month to help the Dead TV Podcast pay for all of its expenses, such as site maintenance and such. I'm your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
And we bid you adieu for at least a couple more weeks as we end Constantine. Goodbye.
Goodbye, folks. Shut up.